Antarctica is a vortex that draws you back season after season. It's raw and pure, all seal hide and crystalline iceberg. That's how novelist Lucy Jane Bledsoe describes the place. She's been there three times as part of the National Science Foundation's Artists and Writers in Antarctica program. And she's just written a novel set there. It's called The Big Bang Symphony, a novel of Antarctica. Bledsoe says Antarctica is addictive. She told Anne Strandchamp she fell in love with the place the first time she saw it.
What hit me most was the hugeness. I was lucky enough to fly in. The Air Force flies the scientists and workers in, and the artists like me. And flying in on a very clear day, I just couldn't believe how huge these expanses of ice were. And I guess that and how incredibly gorgeous. A lot of the historical writers, Shackleton, Scott, all of them, talk about conquering wilderness, conquering their fear there and how to overcome that. And for me, it was this incredible joy and almost tenderness for the continent that I discovered. It's just so beautiful.
Really? Because, you know, in photographs, it looks empty and bleak. What's beautiful about it?
For me, what's beautiful is the power of the place. Again, how I realize those great chunks of ice are controlling the entire planet. Also, just the mountains. The mountains are beautiful, and the sea is beautiful, and the animals are beautiful. One of the most tremendous things about Antarctica is that the animals have never been hunted. I guess Shackleton and some of the early explorers hunted them, but they haven't been hunted enough to learn to fear people. So you can literally walk, if you wanted to pet a seal, you could. You could walk right up to them.
Hmm. Now, the place is also, at least for a home dweller like me, also seems terrifying. I mean, there's so many ways you can die so quickly in Antarctica. You know, you wander out of your tent and, you know, if you lose sight of the other tents, a half an hour out there and you're dead.
That's very true. And there were two young people in their 20s, the youngest who can actually go there and work. I think they were galley workers who, the first time I was there, went on a walk. And there's, you can go on walks with other people, and if you take a radio, and if you stick to the few flagged routes. But they decided, ah, it's a beautiful night, we'll go off the flag trail. And the woman literally dropped into a crevasse and ended up having to brace herself between the two walls of the crevasse, and she was rescued because they did have a radio. But it really drove home to me how one step away from the rules or off the trails, and it's extremely dangerous.
But I think that some combination of the fact, the extreme and somewhat desolate beauty of the place, coupled with the heightened sense of risk and of your own vulnerability, has maybe something to do with the special aura that Antarctica has. And I was interested that one reviewer of your most recent novel commented that in your book, Antarctica is really a character, not just a setting. Was that something you were deliberately trying to do?
Yes, very much so. There's no people indigenous to Antarctica. So when people come there, they're actually coming in a sense to a place that has never, ever been interpreted. And it makes the place a character. Like when you write about New York, you know, you're up against thousands of interpretations of that landscape and the millions of human voices and stories. And that's interesting, of course, in its own way, but you have to carve a story and find the city, find the landscape. Antarctica, there's never been people there. So it just levels you the minute you set foot on it, in the extremity of the cold and beauty. It has this huge emotional impact. And it can't help but be a character in any story told there, just because you're living so very, I mean, every calorie you take in, you're aware of. Every calorie you burn, you're aware of. Every piece of clothing. So it's this biological, close-to-the-bone-ness that the place gives you, and you can't ignore it.
Early on in your book, one of your main characters, Rosie, tells another that Antarctica changes everyone who goes there. Was that true for you?
It's very much true for me. And it's hard to quantify what that change is. For me, my novel has three main characters, and I think each one represents a little bit in the way that I changed. Michaela, the composer character, really found her voice, and I think I did find my voice finally by, again, that close-to-the-bone existence and being somewhere so intensely beautiful. And I also found a sense of home. It's funny, the guy who runs the Artists and Writers Program, or did, he's retired, his name's Guy Guthridge, wonderful person. I told him in my application that I wanted to find the meaning of home in Antarctica, and he laughed at me, and I almost didn't get the fellowship because he said, no one thinks of Antarctica as home. It just doesn't happen. I'm stubborn. I still went looking for home, and I feel like I did find a sense of home for myself in that. There was a moment I had a big epiphany. I was in the Transantarctic Mountains, and I'd just been flown in there and dumped in this camp. And I was so alone in that huge beauty. And I just had this realization that, and it sounds a little corny, but that I was home, and this was all I wanted.
That reminds me of another story that comes up, or another piece of Antarctic lore that the characters in your book are always passing back and forth to each other, you know, that they say, the first time you go to Antarctica, it's for the money. The second trip is for the adventure. The third is because you no longer fit in anyplace else. It sounds like, in a way, that might be you.
That's funny. Well, I've been three times. That's the joke about that. I don't live there, but there's a huge part of me that would love to. If I had my life to live over again, that might be the life I would choose. Or if somehow my life exploded and fell apart right now, I would go do that in a heartbeat. It's interesting, the long-timers who go back season after season, and most the season is usually about 5 months long, they do talk about being addicted. When you live somewhere that intense, it's hard to accept a regular mundane life.
You also suggested at some point in the book, I think, that there may be some actual biology to the personal transformations that seem to happen in Antarctica, that being there actually alters people's brain chemistry.
That's true. There was a poster in the science lab there at Crary Lab, which is the big science lab in McMurdo, that explained that there's actual a hormone change that happens because of the extreme cold, and it makes you forgetful and a lot of other things. Yeah, it's very interesting.
So you may literally be somebody different when you're there.
Well, that's true. I haven't thought about it that way exactly, but I think that's true, yeah.
So you were there as part of the National Science Foundation's program for artists and writers, as are some of the characters you've written about. What is this connection between Antarctica and the arts?
It's a really exciting connection, I think. Very rarely do scientists and artists dialogue. And this program was started to make that happen so that people like me and also photographers, there I think a choreographer went once, a couple musicians, go and spend time with scientists doing Antarctic science and then interpret it artistically.
One of the things I came away from your novel realizing is that Antarctica isn't all just about snow and ice, that it's at the center of a lot of different scientific quests to see into our origins. You know, so you have physicists who are there and using telescopes to try to see into the origins of the Big Bang. I began to think that one of the things that's unique about Antarctica is that it's one place that really does connect us to our origins in this very primal way.
That's very true, and that's very well put. The continent has not been contaminated, and that's why scientists love it. There's the Big Bang Telescope at the South Pole, which is what I call it in my novel, it's had many names, DAISY, a couple, they keep building better new ones that have different names. But there's not the atmospheric pollution of light and noise and other radiation between that telescope that they put at the South Pole and the rest of the atmosphere so that they get the cleanest shot back into the stars and back in time. Same thing in the Dry Valleys for the geologists. Every single bit of human waste, everything is flown out, every bit of human waste off the continent, which
so
is
you
just,
can't just go pee on the ice if you're in the dry valleys.
You cannot go pee on the ice. You carry these little bottles. You know, everybody's very matter of fact about it. You know, you have pee funnels and you have your pee bottles and you store everything. They're put in big drum barrels. And I was out at a penguin camp and there was a big storm one day and we had to empty the bucket into the big barrel. And as an artist, I was always trying to prove that I was, you know, worth my keep and that I would do the work. I had to go out in the storm and empty the pee bucket into the big barrel in this big windstorm. And it's just sort of this horrendous process. But they are very, very, very careful to keep the human contamination at a minimum so that we can really see a part of the earth that hasn't been touched by humans. And it's the only place left.
Will you go back?
I would go back in a heartbeat. Anytime someone wants to invite me, it's hard to just go. The first two times I got a fellowship from the National Science Foundation, and the third time I was invited to go with this Australian group to go as a tourist, probably wouldn't be how I'd want to go now. Very few tourists actually get to set foot on the continent. They often go to an island off of the mainland, but it'd be hard to go any way but the way I went before. So if I could think of a way to do it, or if an opportunity came up, I would certainly go.
Lucy Jane Bledsoe, talking with Anne Strainchamps about her new novel, The Big Bang Symphony, a novel of Antarctica.